Well, I had three positive things I want to start out with.
All right.
I think I might have mentioned Matt Cohn. He's an M&A guy and a business valuation expert. And so I'm going through his business valuation thing, and that's really helping me. And when I get through that, if you want, I'd be happy to make an introduction to you. He's really a great guy, and I think he would probably compliment some things you do, and it may be something that would be valuable to other advisors for you as well.
Yeah, I'd be interested when we get a little further into this. Maybe we go circle back and tell me why and how.
Okay, super.
Go ahead.
And then, for the first time, I've used the 90-day free look period.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this great introduction, it was sort of a reintroduction. We had met before, but it was a reintroduction from another friend, and someone that we professionally work with. And it's gone really well. She's a corporate executive at Apple. It's going to be a great relationship. And so it is kind of interesting. In my career, I've never had this happen. Her and her husband got married later in life, and she said up front, look, we keep everything separate. She said, we tried. So we first got married. I told him, hey, let's put everything together. And she said, it was a total disaster. We fought all the time. And so we just said, hey, look, this is the only area we fight about. He's a business owner and she's an executive. So they just keep their finances, I guess, pretty much separate, and their planning and stuff separate, except for maybe they have a joint household account or something. They pay their, you know, stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
But yet in all sales, it's always interesting. So went through the whole three meeting process. Everything has gone great. It's been a wonderful experience. On that last, when we got to the third meeting, she didn't say yes and she didn't say no. She said, hey, you know, it's a big decision and I need to reflect on it. And I said, sure, no problem. And she said, let's schedule a time to follow up so that way if I have any more questions. So we scheduled that. Then that meeting got delayed a little bit. She had some other issue at work or something. And so that got rescheduled. And so we had the meeting. She asked a few more questions. We answered all those. She said, okay, I feel good about that. I feel good about questions. And said, I feel good about you and working together. She said, I talked to my husband, Jeff, and his only request was that I not do anything until after the midterm elections.
What?
And so I said, okay. I said, just out of curiosity, you know, kind of here's our thoughts about the midterms, but just out of curiosity, what would change after the midterms either way? If the Republicans don't win or if they do win, how's that going to change your situation or the outcomes you achieve? And she says, I have no idea. But it's one of those things like, you know, sometimes in marriage, you honor someone's request, even if you don't agree, to keep peace in the house. So that's when I said, okay. Other than that, is there any other concerns that you have or that Jeff has? She said, no, I feel good about you and working. I said, okay, we don't do this for everybody, but here's what I'd be willing to do for you. I would be willing to give you a 90-day free look. So let's pretend that you just said yes. And so we'll do everything, for the most part, just like you just said yes, except that we won't open the new accounts and we won't submit the ACAT transfers. But we'll go ahead and I had already mailed her 12-4-2 folder and her ahead of that meeting. This is if she was going to say, I said, and already had the proposed dates and times for the 12-4-2 meetings. I said, if you look in your folder, I had the proposed meeting dates. Do those times and days work for you? And she goes, yeah, those look good. And I said, okay, so our next scheduled meeting will be next month on whatever. And we can just do these meetings via Zoom instead of a phone call. And we'll do an abbreviated financial plan. I think I'm going to share a sample of financial plan instead of abbreviated financial plan. But anyway, so I said, how does that sound to you? And then about 90 days from now, the midterms will already be over and they'll give you an opportunity to see a little bit more about how we work with clients and experience. And I said, we can even include Jeff on, you know, the executive summaries. And she goes, oh, I think that's a really good idea. I'll see if he wants to join us on the next meeting. That's it. Right. So
I like abbreviated rather than sample.
You do.
Sample sounds like it doesn't apply to her.
So help me understand how to do that. So for example, I have a sample corporate executive plan and that would address a lot of similarities. But, and that's what I'm asking for your feedback on. So we have a financial planner team, right? So normally we do that. So how do we do, if we're going to do abbreviated, what would that look like? That's what I'm, because I've already done the 5-year cash flow analysis and a balance sheet for at the third meeting.
Yeah, the most important thing for a person like this is the cash flow analysis and then projected cash flow analysis at retirement.
Okay. So I did the 5-year cash flow analysis now. That's part of our value add at the third meeting. And she loved it. She said, oh, this, when we went through the cash flow analysis, she goes, oh, I love this. This is great.
She likes the numbers.
Yes, she loves that. She's in sales for Apple. She does a lot of their sales stuff. So she loved the numbers. All right. So if you're going to do abbreviated plans, so normally, you know, it's pretty, we address different areas like long-term care. Do that. You're saying just do, so include balance sheet, which we've already done, balance sheet, 5-year cash flow analysis now, and then.
I do a projected cash flow analysis at retirement.
Okay. And like the first 5 years at retirement or what? Just that first year?
Just, you know, she's going to want to know what she's going to earn.
Okay.
What are your estimations that I'm going to earn when I retire the first year? That's all I need.
So then would you do something like Monte Carlo or what else?
I'd do a Monte Carlo to come up with, you know, you don't want to have just to be a guess, but you can do a pretty good analysis of what the value of her, you know, is that 10 years from now? You know, so just take everything out of 10 years and then based on a Monte Carlo probability analysis, what that's going to look like in terms of not just what she has, but what that would generate in terms of cash flow. And you know, so she can then kind of project in today's dollars what she's going to have to spend.
Okay. And anything else that you would put in? So you'd do balance sheet, which is it? Balance sheet, 5-year cash flow analysis now, projected cash flow at retirement that first year, and then maybe Monte Carlo.
And then I'd start to talk about she's going to have plenty of money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
and so one of the things.
Yeah. I'd start to talk about the why, you know, you have a clear sense of your why.
Right.
And what, right? Why and what are you going to do? And right. She needs a why and a what.
Okay. We've identified the why.
Why? And then the what is, how are you going to do that? Are you going to set up a family foundation, a community foundation? Are you gonna, you know, what will be the tools that you know, and you can start to discuss the difference between the two. And so she, and that just takes up conversation time in those 12-4-2s.
Okay. And so one of the things I identified now was, you know, Apple stock is a big part, and it's a huge part of her net worth. And we talked about putting some downside strategies in place. Now, I've never personally actually used a collar strategy, but I'm familiar with it.
Yep.
Is that something that you regularly use or other advisors that you work with use on this large position?
Yeah, it's great. And then if the stock goes up, you wish you hadn't done it, you know. So you don't want to do it. I prefer the exchange traded funds, Eaton Vance tax managed trust. They diversify your risk. And you know, you don't get taxed on the dollars that you exchange into. So
I don't understand how that strategy works. So you can hold the Apple stock.
No, you send the stock into them, and in return you get a tax managed trust.
Okay, so maybe we can talk
just
more
as,
about
it's that. Just as if you sold the stock and bought a mutual fund. But you don't have to pay taxes.
And what is that called?
Eaton Vance Tax Managed Trust.
Okay.
So you could do a collar on some of her, you know, on some of her stock, but you know, you don't want to do it all.
Basically, what you're talking about, the strategy you're talking about is you're basically loaning them the Apple stock and then you're getting this back in exchange.
That's
and
right.
Then at some point you'd have to, we can talk about it, I guess, more later, but
at some point you decide that you don't want your Apple stock back and you want to keep the trust.
The main thing we need is a downside strategy. Like, you know, if what happened to Netflix or with Amazon, she don't want half of her net worth to go away or 70%.
All right. So I had Merrill Lynch, right? At $10 a share and it was 100.
Right.
And it went down to 60. And I did 3 Eaton Vance tax managed trusts, 3 separate ones, like at 80, 70 and 60, right? And the market went down. Right. Because this was 2008, but it didn't go as down as Merrill Lynch went to $3.
Right.
Okay. And the Eaton Vance didn't go down that much. Now I don't have the Eaton Vance. I ended up selling it, but, my buddy, he still got his Eaton Vance and he gets the dividends from him or with, you know, automatic withdrawals or whatever he does. And he's very happy with it.
Okay. Thank you. Cause sometimes it's a good alternative to, okay, this has been great to you. Now let's sell the stock. And it's better than putting a stop loss doesn't really help because then also you trigger gains in 1 year. I mean, it's better than nothing at all, but a stop loss.
And then, then the stock goes from 170 to 220 and then you look,
you look stupid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then another, good thing is, so I had another introduction from another business client who has a Merrill Lynch advisor and has some stuff at, I guess she doesn't own it at, Schwab. And, anyway, so she, it was pretty cool. After we had a great phone conversation, she's a real, go-getter to be perfect ideal client. Her and her business partner started and ran like 100 Taco Bells and Kentucky Fried Chicken before they sold them. And she got $5 million for her part. And so she has her money split up between Merrill and Schwab. And, so my friend sung my praises and then we had a great initial phone conversation. And after that, she sent a text message to the person who introduced her and said, Preston seems wonderful. Thank you so much for the introduction. Look, we're in. Then we had the financial roadmap meeting in person. That went really well. I gave her the homework assignment. She's working on that. So that is a really good, introduction and I feel good about the relationship and hopefully we'll onboard that client as well. So that's really
congratulations. Cool. You're hitting it.
Yeah. Thanks. Hey, I'm going to see Brad Blessing tomorrow. Have you had any communication? Good, bad, ugly?
Nothing.
Just none.
He just went quiet and that's okay. I mean, if he's,
So, any words of encouragement that I can give him tomorrow when I see him? Like, hey, I just had my coaching call with Rob yesterday and.
Well, just tell him what you're doing. You know, let me tell you what it's done for my practice.
Yeah. He's seen it. That's what's interesting.
Right. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, but if you'll do the homework and follow the process.
Yeah.
You'll be organized. And what is that worth to you? Just being organized.
I know. I don't know what his holdup is.
Some people, look, you will always have a coach. You see the value in listening and learning. You're an eager, not super eager. You're just an eager learner. Okay. We're both eager learners, but we're, you know, over the years we become, we're thoughtful, eager learners, right? We don't just adopt everything. We think and we're not just bright, shiny objects, right?
Right.
But we both see the value in having coaches, right? There's a value in having a coach for, if nothing more than accountability.
Right.
Right. Just that by itself, right? Personal trainer, accountability. In this case, I think you're good, right? Because you do, how do I phrase this? You do what I suggest. Okay.
I'm teachable.
You're very teachable, right? And some people aren't. And when I had my friend, John Cunningham from, UBS on, and I did the webinar with him, it was because he's coachable. You know, it's like, how do you prove the process works? You have somebody that actually does it.
Right.
And then he explodes in business, right?
Right.
And John has exploded in business, and he's 68 years old.
Right.
And he's growing faster than he's ever grown. All right. So, and he's happier and more excited and more in touch with the why and the what. And he's in a really happy, I think he's in a really good place. And who can get him there? Not his manager.
Right.
Not his spouse, not his kids. So who's going to get him there? A coach. A coach will get you there because your coach is going to ask those things. And you're, you know, you're like, oh shit. why am I doing this stuff? You know?
That's so right. Anyway, so that leads into the next thing, which is, yeah. So I sent you a T-chart. So I think it was a really helpful exercise because temporarily my wife Shelley had to do some things that she didn't enjoy doing. So I asked her, I don't know if you had a chance to look at that, but I asked her to do a T-chart and put everything on the left that she enjoys doing and then put anything that she doesn't enjoy doing.
Right.
And then anything she doesn't enjoy doing, let's talk about that and let's delegate that to the other staff members on our team and have them do all the stuff she doesn't enjoy and her focus on the things that she's good at and that she enjoys. That makes her happier, but it makes my life better, makes me happier.
Yeah. Especially since you're so intimately involved.
That's right. Yes. And so, and then also the other thing that, was helping her with is I said, I want you to have more time freedom. And I also want you to have more dedicated time where you don't feel like you're working all the time because it's kind of her nature to just be busy all the time. She has a hard time just sitting and doing nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and it's frustrating for me sometimes. So like, I want you to have some space between work and when we sit down at the dinner table. So you're not like, you know, you sit down at the dinner table and then there's nothing left over for me or for our family. Right. And you're still like, you know. So we defined that, but I want, and then she did a good job of defining, you know, what she wanted the other team members to do. And what I wanted your input, you can even think about it and follow up with me or send me an email, how I should best disseminate that to the other team members so that it's clear what their role is and what her role is and what they're doing and what she's doing. She feels like that's already clear, but I'm not so sure. So.
Okay. Two things. One is, the power of full engagement is something that you should read and she should read. Jim Lehrer's power of full engagement. Why?
Because power of full engagement.
Yeah. It's a great book. It talks about rituals and everything that I teach, but it, he was one of my mentors.
Okay.
But he talks about the, you know, the financial advisor that drives home, you know, gets in the car, you know, gets out of the car, walks in the house and flops down in the, you know, and the kids run up and he's like not there.
Right.
Right?
Right.
He's, you know, give me a minute to decompress. So the basic premise is sit in your car before you come in the house and get your mind right.
Right. For your family. Okay. That's a good suggestion.
Okay.
Okay, and then the other is, I guess, an interesting case study. I've reflected on it some. It caught me a little off surprise. I think I've made my mind up what to do, but I haven't made a final decision. And I'd like your input. And it may be an interesting case study in human emotions and stuff. And as a friend of mine once said that had been in this business for like 30 years. He said, you know, Preston, we are not in the investment business. And I said, really? He said, no, we're in the entertainment business because the investments haven't changed in the last 100 years. The only thing that's changed is how we report on them And so we put people in these long-term investments that take 20 or 30 years to work out. And then it's our job to entertain them in the meantime until they work, give them enough time to work out. So I always kind of keep that in mind. And also that humans have emotions and all those kind of things. So these are, I guess it was a self-introduction through my BNI group. He's a dentist. She did work in the dental practice with him doing the books. And then in COVID, they had to let her go because of the revenue went way down. He was trying to sell the practice before that and move up here. He finally did sell the practice, but he really gave the practice away. Because he ended up getting like $50,000 for a practice that he's had for 30 years that was generating about $120,000 or $130,000 of revenue for him, plus $50,000 or $60,000 for his wife. He sold it for more than $50,000, but he had to stay in the practice for 2 years for 3 days a week. And he's only actually collected about $50,000 from the sale of the business on top of what they paid him for. It's just a terrible deal. But I think this is, in any way, we've done 1242, we've done a financial plan, we AK'd their stuff. They had way too big of a house here with a big mortgage. They worked with them and said, you know, this is too big a mortgage for you and what you want to do. So we helped them with the realtor and sold the house. They had equity in that. We took the equity out. We invested really conservatively. We helped them identify a builder and doing the planning on the new house. There were some issues around dragging their feet and then even getting the clear title to the other lot because they cut off part of the lot that they sold. And they could never get it. They still don't have a clear title. And it's been a year since they sold the house. And so there's been a lot. In the meantime, you know, the cost of building has gone up. And also the house they designed is way over their budget. And now the lot's worth a lot more. And so kind of his dream has been to live on the waterfront. And so twice I've kind of had to be the bearer of bad news, which is you can live on the waterfront, but not in this house and get these outcomes. Then they've waited a whole year. Now their income went way down and their expenses about doubled. And I pointed this out to them, their financial plan about 2 or 3 months ago, like, hey, you know, and plus interest rates have gone way by mortgages. And I said, hey, based on what your expenses, your new expenses are and how much you spent in the last 12 months and based on what your income is and your projected income is going to be over the next 12 months, I don't think you can afford to build this house because you're willing to build because your plan won't support that. And the financial planning shows it went through all the plan. It won't support it. So what you might consider is why don't we consider getting a realtor's opinion on the lot to see what the value is and maybe sell the lot. The lot's paid for. Maybe sell the lot. And then you can take that money and buy another house and, you know, be a less house, but you can pay cash for it or you can finance or whatever you want to do. So unfortunately, I think I've had to poo-poo his dreams twice. And that's not always great, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hard for sometimes people to follow. And when I talked to the realtor, the good news was the lot was worth way more than we thought. But the realtor said when he talked to him that he didn't think they had any interest in selling, they were just appeasing me. So then I think I'm back to what I think the issue is I think that, and these are business owners. I think, and this is the second time this happened to me in the last year. I think the issue is, they had the same CPA for many, many years, maybe the whole 30 years of practice, right? When I originally first brought them on, I reached out to the CPA. We tried to get an appointment with him and he couldn't ever get an appointment. Finally said he won't make an appointment. He said, just call those deals. And when I called, basically he's a solo practitioner. He doesn't even have an assistant or anybody answer the phone. And he said, oh, I run this. He goes, I laughed when your assistant said they want to make an appointment with me. You know, I run this thing like a firehouse. You know, I come in and I answer the phones and I was just like, oh, this guy's not, you know, but they've been with him for a long time. So I didn't poo-poo him right off the bat. Well, then he was on board with what I recommended to them about they had too much house. And he said, that's a great advice. And I said, you know, at the time I said, you could just take the equity and pay cash for another house, but we'll run the numbers in your plan. And even when I did the plan, I said, look, it actually shows that you'll end up with an extra $1 million over time if you finance the house instead of paying cash. But it's up to you, whichever you want to do, would be my advice to finance it. So anyway, and then this season is tax season. I happen to be out of town April the 15th, and although my office was open, instead of filing an extension, he called them up and said, look, instead of filing an extension, he called the clients up and said, hey, what you need to do is you need to fund your traditional IRA And they're like, well, Preston's out of town, because I told him I was going to be out of town, be back. Well, what you need to do is just go down. The husband was out in a, where his practice is different town. He had each one of them go to a local bank and open an IRA and put the money in a 90-day CD. And then so when Preston gets back, then when those come due, then you can just open an account with Preston and you can move those accounts over to him. And I got back and I was like, why wouldn't he just file an extension? That was really dumb. That was a lot of work for you. And then we spent a lot of work trying to ACAT those CDs. It's been a pain in the ass. Anyway, so then I scheduled after the financial plan. I said, look, you need more income, right? If we had the platform, I said, look, you need more income and we're going to have to do one of two things. Either we probably need to take some income out of your portfolio to subsidize your income until you're able to build your income up here, or we may need to take your Social Security early before you meet the, but I want to talk to your CPA first before we make that decision. So I'll follow up with him. I know he's not going to like that idea because I've mentioned that before, but I'll talk to him and we'll run the numbers and see which one is in your best interest. And they said, okay. Well, my staff called this guy. They called him. It took us over a week to even get. I called him first because I knew he didn't like working my appointments. And I said, hey, just give me a call and let my staff know when a window is, time is good for you. Da, da. We called him for 2 weeks straight. Like, I had to call him a couple different times, send an email, no response. Finally, I had to put one of my staff members and said, just call the guy every single day and leave a message. Say, this is, you know, calling for on behalf of our mutual clients at Davies. Preston needs to talk to you about their taxes and about their income. Finally, after almost 2 weeks, he made an appointment. And when I called, it was obvious that they had already spoke to him about their whole situation before I ever talked to him. And he said, I said, hey, you know, told him the situation. And I said, I wanted to see what the numbers look like if they take their, so we may need to take their Social Security early. Before, and he said, well, that's not going to work. And here's why. They're going to have to give back $2 for da, 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 da. And that's not going to work. And he said, you know, what I told Bill is that what he needed to do was, he said, I looked at what you've done for him. And he said, you know, their account's down from where they invested and it's not really doing much. And he said, what I told him to do is have more income. All he knew, he said, like, for example, he goes, why don't you just reposition the portfolio where it creates some good dividends? And then he can get $40,000 or $50,000 a year extra income. That'll be fine. And I said, well, I'm happy to do that, but that wasn't how we structured the portfolio specifically. We structured for low volatility. And then he starts telling me, well, you know, like I own these different companies. He owns to pay dividends. And I said, well, thanks. I really appreciate that. But I said, that's not our strategy. And I said, an example is if I'd put their money in AT&T stock, it would have paid a great dividend then, but the dividend got cut and the value's way down. Oh, well, I wouldn't own AT&T. And I was getting kind of irritated with him. And so I said, well, by the way, I said, I'm happy to, you know, review some things with the Davies and happy to reposition some things to generate more income. That's no problem for us. I'm happy to make that shift, but that wasn't how we originally set up for low volatility and it is generating some income. And I'll be happy to visit with them about that, make any shifts they want to. I said, by the way, the other thing that I've mentioned to the Davies is that it looks like that we're not going to fund a SEP and that we'll probably just fund a traditional IRA again for 2022. And he goes, yeah, that's probably right. And I said, well, in that case, I'm going to go ahead and transfer money from their retail account to each one of their traditional IRAs so we don't have to go through that same process that we did this year and waiting till the last minute. And then if for some reason, you know, it's beneficial to do the SEP. We can fund the SEP or we can uncharacterize those IRAs. And he goes, well, I'll talk with them about that. I was like, why are you going to talk to him about it? You know, and I just said, anyway, it was kind of, I didn't like it. So anyway, and then when I talked to the Davies, I said, then we had a scheduled follow-up after that call. I said, hey, your CPA and I are in agreement that it does not make sense to take Social Security early because there'd be too big of a tax penalty. And I wanted to talk with him about that first. So we're happy to reposition. I'm happy to, you know, reposition some things in your portfolio and to generate more income. Have you made any progress on looking at your budget and finding out the areas that you can, you know, cut your expenses and stuff? And they said, well, we're working on that, you know. And then the next thing they hit me with, this was last month, the next thing they hit me with is, well, about the value of their portfolio. Well, it's only down like 15% last month for the year to date. And so I said, well, yeah, I mean, it's been the worst 6 months we've had since the 1930s, the beginning of the market. And I said, the good news is, you know, you didn't own Netflix. If you're a corporate executive at Netflix, your account value would be down 70%. If you're a corporate executive at Amazon, your account would be down 50%, you know, at the time. If you work for any of the 5,000 NASDAQ companies, your portfolio would be down 40%. And so your account is down, but it's not down 70, 50 or 40%. And you got great diversification and, you know, we got a good plan and a good strategy. We've got different buckets and you're in good shape. And so he kind of said, oh yeah, that's good. And I like that. And I'm not sure she fully understood that. So, and then I said, by the way, we're going to go ahead and move money from your retail account over to go ahead and put into your IRAs. I've talked to your CPA so that we don't have this same issue next year. And I said, it was a lot of work for you and for us to try and get those. And she was like, well, it wasn't that much work for us to open those. And I was thinking like, I didn't say this, but I was saying like, we've probably spent more than 10 hours filling out paperwork and ACAT stuff and making phone calls.
You should have said that. We spent 10 hours.
Yeah. And so anyway, so she said, well, do we have to do that now? And I said, yeah, it makes sense to do that now. She said, well, can't we just schedule a meeting with you and the CPA next year? And I said, I'm happy to schedule a meeting. That's no problem for me, but he doesn't like to work by appointments. And there's absolutely no downside to putting the money in now, because if for any reason we don't want to do that, we can uncharacterize it or take the money back out. There's no penalty and anything else. And it's good timing. It'll save you a lot of deal. And then she said, well, you know, she finally just said, well, let us talk to our CPA and make sure that's, you know, it kind of pissed me off, quite frankly. I was kind of irritated. And I just said, okay, it's up to you. It's not something we have to do, but I would recommend that. I think it makes sense. So I felt like there was a little strain in the relationship and I was a little irritated. And, so right before our scheduled phone call this month, which was last week, I sent them our chart showing, you know, how we work with clients. Like, you're the client, right? We're the advisor. And then here's all the subject matter experts at the bottom: tax, financial planning, money. Cause I wanted to have that discussion about, you know, it's up to you, but you're the client. I'm the trust advisor that leads and coordinates the team, but you're trying to, you know, not usurp, but really that's kind of what they are. And he's trying to usurp me. But we never got to that part of the conversation because I said, hey, I've got the agenda. We start off with nice pleasantries. They were going to seem good. I was in a good mood. I said, hey, you know, is there anything top of mind or specific that you want to make sure we go over today that's not on the agenda that you want to address? And the husband said, yes, we would like for you to no longer manage our money. And I was kind of like, whoa, I did not see that coming, right? And the wife said, well, yeah, what's the process for that? And I said, wow, I'm really surprised to hear you say that. I didn't expect that. And I said, is there something wrong with our relationship? Or is there anything, you know, is there a break or something in our relationship? And the husband said, no, our relationship is good. We like you and we trust you and we value your advice and opinion, but we just no longer want you to do that part of our relationship. And I said, okay. And I said, do you mind sharing with me what you're going to do with the money? So he said, I want you to move all the money in stocks and bonds to cash and immediately. And I said, And I said, we can do that, but I wouldn't recommend that. And then I said, you know, what would you do with the money? And he said, well, I may just put it in CDs at the bank. Wow. And I said, well, that won't help you get your long, based on your plan and the outcomes you're going to achieve, that will not help you achieve your long-term objectives. And I would strongly not advise that. And he said, I don't know if I said this part, but he said, well, I'm tired of paying you fees and losing money. That's what he said. Tired of paying you fees and losing money. I want you to do everything in cash. And I said, well, I understand that. And I can certainly understand that you're not happy about your account value being down. Nobody's more unhappy about that than me, but we don't live in a bubble. And when we compare your account to how stocks and bonds and other things in the marketplace have done, you're way better off than the majority of other people. And besides that, we already have about 8% of your portfolio in cash now. We've got another 10% in a short-term bucket, and then we've got other really good bonds, and you only have about 52% in equities overall in your portfolio. And, you know, so you've already got some. So we explore a little bit, and he said, well, I'm not saying I'm going to put in CDs forever, but for now, that's what I'm going to do. I said, well, I wouldn't recommend that. And I said, do you have a piece of paper handy? And I went to walk him through like a T-chart. And I said, you know, what would you say the inflation rate is right now? And he said, oh, it's probably 10%. And I said, well, in some areas it probably is, but it's probably not going to stay 10% long term. Let's say 5%. And he goes, okay, we'll go with your number. I like that better. And I said, and he goes, oh, I understand about inflation and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, for your wife's benefit, could we just walk you through? So I just did 5 years. I said, just put $1 million on the piece of paper, 5%. You're losing $50,000 a year. At the end of 5 years, how much have you lost? You know, and how much inflation have we had? He said, $250,000. I said, so how much money do you have left? He said, I still have $1 million. And I said, well, on paper, but you only have $750,000 of purchasing power. And I said, if you do that for another 5 years, that's $500,000. You've lost into inflation. Even if you still have $1 million, you've lost $500,000. And now you want to retire on $500,000, there's no way you can do that. You'll run out of money. I said, in 22 years, I've never run anybody out of money. But I said, if you do what you're proposing, you will run out of money. I said, very slowly, it won't be rapidly, but over time, you will run out of money. You will not, and I do not recommend that. We talked about some other things, and I said, look, if you need more income, it's no problem. Of course, he's not the numbers guy. She's always been the numbers person. He's kind of the, you know, the dreamer, right? And so I said, look, if you need more money, it's no problem. Look, we can generate between 4 to 5%, you know, cash flow of your portfolio right away. And we can do that monthly or quarterly or semi, however you want. Why don't we do this? He said, I want you to move everything again. I said, look, instead of, you know, we got a great plan in place. Why don't we move, we'll make some transitions, and why don't we start depositing that money into your bank account on a monthly basis? Do you want, you know, $40,000 or $50,000? And he said, I want you to move all the money to cash right now. And I said, I really wouldn't recommend that. And he said, well, that's what I want to do. And so then I said, well, okay. And I said, I forget what I said now, but basically I was like, well, you know, cause they basically, they want to continue the 12-4-2 and the financial planning. And I said, our minimum account, I said, for new clients, our minimum fee is $20,000. He goes, so now you're firing me? I said, no, I'm not firing you. I'm advising you, you know, and I'm telling you that our minimum fee is $20,000. If you take all the money away from us, we can't deliver this level of service on $5,000. Well, I already paid you a financial planning fee. Are you going to refund that back for the, it says a date. And I said, well, I'll go back and look at our ADV, but I'm pretty sure that what it says is that's for the financial plan. And we've delivered that. And I'll be happy to go back and look at the agreement, but I don't, well, you've charged me. And of course we charged in April. We delivered the plan in May or June, you know, he was kind of mad. He was like, oh, so now you're going to fire me? I was like, no, I'm not going to fire you. You're firing yourself. I'm asking you not to fire me. And I said, look, if you really want to roll that money in cash, I can do that. Why don't we do this? Why don't we move the equity portion? If you're really concerned, we'll move the 52% to cash. We'll leave the bonds and the cash or have invested every month. Go comfortable. And then move everything to cash. So he had already made up his mind before the call. And I was, and in my opinion, I don't know this.
This was a CPA. This was the CPA's doing.
I believe that. I believe the CPA said, just fire him and just buy these dividend stocks. You don't need to pay him. And it always, it seems like it comes out of jealousy, right? Like, you know, the CPA can see how much they're paying me in fees. And he's like, well, I'm not charged. I'm not getting this, you know? And so anyway, it's got to be the CPA because this guy has never been a do-it-yourselfer money manager. And it just, it makes no sense. And he just totally blew up the plan. But then I sent a follow-up email, because the wife, in the conversation, the wife said, you want him to sell everything in Rich Cash? She goes, yes, everything. And she goes, well, Preston, let us talk and make sure we're on the same page, and then we'll follow up with you tomorrow. Well, then about 30 minutes of the meeting, she sent an email saying, per our request, we were thinking cash. And so then the next morning, after I did that, I sent him a nice thing saying, you know, per our conversation, you know, here's my advice, here's my recommendation. I do not recommend you do this. However, per your request, we've made these changes. Our next scheduled meeting would have been, our next phone call meeting would have been September, whatever it is, you know. However, I would be happy to have that meeting in person and discuss what it would look like if we were to continue to work together and if it makes sense for us to work together and what the next step would be if we wanted to do that or not. And then the husband replied back and said, yes, we would like that in-person meeting. We'll see you on whatever. And I'm like, I've just never had anybody say, oh, we really value you and your opinion. And I mean, I've had people say, you're a rotten SOB. We don't like you and we're doing this. We're taking, okay, wish you the best, you know, or a lot of times I have people just say like, well, we're going a different direction. Thank you for what you've done. Okay, great. My pleasure. You know, wish you the best. But never anybody say, you're great. We value and trust you. We want to continue a relationship with you, but we don't want you to manage the money part, but we'd like to continue to see you. And it's weird. So technically, we charge three different ways. One, financial planning fees. One, assets under management. And then for businesses, we'll do like a monthly coaching fee until they get to our minimum. So in theory, I could still work with them if I charged them a higher annual planning fee, which would be appropriate for their asset. And I charge them a monthly coaching fee. But I just think we have different philosophies, and they didn't even discuss with me. Like,
right.
I just think the relationship is broke. It's kind of like they've got a mistress and the mistress has given them bad information, but they still want to be married. You got to pick. You can't have a mistress and be married, happily married.
Right.
Don't you agree?
I agree. Yeah. It's over.
It's done.
They're headed down. They're going down the sewer.
Yeah. Okay.
And you don't want anything to do with them.
I agree.
You got a liability. You're going to end up, they will sue you because the CPA will say, you ran out of money because Preston charged you all these fees and then he lost money in the stock market. And so you're going to run out of money, or you're out of money. Go back and sue him.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty much what I had decided, was that I just don't want to work with someone that would do that. Like, I don't have a problem if someone calls me, or, and never anybody fired me. Well, I guess I have, but most of the time you'd have the courtesy to come see me in person. But I mean, they didn't ask me like, this is what we'd like to do. You know, what are your thoughts? Or they already had their mind made up, and he was like, there was no change in his mind.
Yeah. So, he's afraid. He is completely fear driven at this point.
Yes, I agree.
He's trying to hold on to every cent. And all his dreams and hopes are going down the tube, and all he sees is his portfolio going down. And so he's like in a panic internally. My whole life is not working out, and I can't. And so he just panicked.
Yeah. And once people do that, once they jump off the bridge, there's not a lot.
They never come back.
Right.
He's going to wait for the perfect time and the
Once the market gets to 40,000, then he'll invest again.
Exactly. Once all the fear is gone in his head.
Yeah.
And then the greed comes in.
I've looked at I have two different agreements. I have a financial planning agreement and I have an advisory agreement, and they're both different. Our advisory agreement says we charge fees quarterly in advance. If you leave or you terminate us before the end of the quarter, we don't prorate fees. So it says that in there because we don't have to jack with that. Then on the financial planning agreement, it says we're going to charge, you know, we're going to do this planning for, and here's the different things we're going to do. And we're going to charge you once a year in advance. And if you terminate us before we deliver the plan, basically is what it says, then we would prorate. Like if you hired me today, you pay me the fee, and then, you know, 30 days from now, I haven't delivered the plan and you fire me.
You've done Well, you're not going to give them anything back.
Right. But at the same time, you know, we live in a small town and I don't like, so, I mean, I feel good from a regulatory standpoint, but, any thoughts or advice on that? Just show them.
No, I mean, I personally think the guy's in a total panic and I would probably, say, you know, we're what, 3/4 of the way through the year. I'll give you 1/4 of the year back on both probably. Yeah. If you've charged him for the full year, then I'd give him whatever the year is left back. That way he feels like he won some of the battle. You don't want to have somebody feel like they've lost.
That's what I'm saying. So even though I feel good about the agreement, even though I've done my part, sometimes
it's worth it to marketing wise to be a nice guy.
All right. So your advice is you prorate, even though I don't have to, don't need to.
That's correct. And I tell them that I don't have to, but I'm going to. I'm going to make an exception in your case because I understand you're really concerned about running out of money. And this is, you know, this may not be, in my opinion, this is the wrong decision, but it is your decision to make. So I'm going to, you know, do my part to try and minimize the pain.
Okay. I think that's good advice. And then so my other question, and we may have to circle back to this next time too, but so this is twice I've run into it, and I've sometimes butt heads with CPAs before because they think totally different. Most of them think advisors don't work enough and get paid way too much. And they think that they work too much and they're underpaid. And they want to be in control of the relationship. But what I find that's more, contentious, I guess is the right word, is when they're business owners, because the business owners tend to talk to their CPA, more often. You know, the retail clients talk to them once a year, twice a year. The business owners, they may have their bookkeeping. They're asking them questions all the time. So they may talk to the CPA 10 or 12 times a year. So the CPA already feels like they're in control of the relationship. And a lot of times I start working with a client, they're already working with a CPA. So, any advice on like one of the things I thought about maybe for business owners, when I show them how we're structured, you're the CEO, we're the CFO. Our job is to lead and coordinate a team of best in class subject matter experts. I understand that you have a CPA that you're working with now. If we determine that they're not best in class and they're not giving you advice that's in your best interest, are you willing to fire them and replace them with the one that we recommend?
Well, I would ask them the question first. Can you enthusiastically endorse your CPA?
Okay. In this case, they would have said, yes, we've known him. We like him. And that's what they did say. We worked with him for the last 30 years. It's been real helpful in our business. Of course, the truth is that's total BS because one, the CPA's own business is worth $0. If he were to sell his business today, he would get $0 because he's the only guy. They're going to have a secretary answer his phone. And unfortunately, he's advised my client happened to have a couple other staff members, but he did a crappy job helping him build a business that he could actually sell or even helping him find a buyer or a business broker.
Right.
Because he basically got nothing for his business.
So I would say, can you enthusiastically endorse your CPA? And they say, oh yeah, we love him. He's terrific. Good. Who is it? Da, da, da. And you should have a ranking. You should have a ranking. Okay. You should know your market well enough that you know who is good and who's not.
Bro, this guy's out of town. He's not here locally. Their CPA's, you know, 300 miles from here.
Got it.
What I'm saying is, I think had I established earlier on the relationship
that he was a screwball, that he was terrible.
Yeah, like after the guy said basically it's like a fire, you know, department, and that I could have gone to my clients and said, look, I did my due diligence. He is not best in class. He's maybe a great guy. I like him. He's a nice guy, but this is not the right person for you, and
right.
I recommend replace him. But that puts the client in a difficult position if they have a really good relationship. So I guess what I'm asking is, what would be your advice on? I really honestly think I hope these clients have long-term care insurance, all kinds of stuff. I mean, they've taken my advice on almost everything And this is totally out of the blue, and it's driven by the CPA.
Yeah, and he's trouble. He's real trouble. Yes, and I would tell him that story. I'd tell him that story. Tell, you know, when you're selling, tell stories. This is a really good story. Okay. This is how a CPA, because he's not an investment guy, is going to hurt a client and help them make really poor decisions, and has historically helped them make poor decisions. So it's important to separate their ability to run numbers from their advice. Okay. They are not trained to give advice.
Right.
Okay. They're trained to run numbers and to save you money on your taxes. They're not coaches. They're not financial advisors.
Right.
Okay. And so taking advice from them can be terrible. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I always want to learn from my experiences, right? Experiences are valuable. Sometimes they're painful. And then not repeat those same experiences. So right. Like the clients are good. I like them. They're sweet people.
How much money do they have?
It's about $1 million, plus or minus $1 million. So they're paying me about a little over 20,000 a year in fees.
Yeah, but they're going to be in trouble. You're going to be very happy you got rid of them.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you. I always like to say, like, well, because it's really, in my opinion, it's a waste of time and energy and money to take someone on that is a client for 2 years and then they leave. I would just assume not take them off.
I know. And look, a self-destructing client that takes bad advice from ignorant people is not somebody you want.
Right. But what I'm getting at is, I completely agree with that, and I'm getting rid of them. What I'm saying is, I wonder how I could have done a better job earlier on.
You could have attempted to fire the CPA. You knew part of your fiduciary responsibility, and I'd say that, part of my fiduciary responsibility is to tell you when I think someone is giving you terrible advice. Okay? And this advice has been bad from the beginning.
So with that, this next in-person meeting, you know, I want to be cordial and nice. And like you said, like, hey, I don't want to do this sitter, but would that just be your agenda is to just say like, hey, I just don't think this.
I wouldn't have the meeting.
You wouldn't.
There's no money in this.
Well, I see the wife at every week on Tuesday at my BNI. She's in my BNI group.
Then you do it and you just, but no, don't bother firing the CPA. It's over.
Right, right. Yeah, our relationship's over. I just meant your advice just to be not even have the meeting at all and just maybe give them a call and say like, hey, you know,
I'm following through on all your instructions. You know, it doesn't make any sense for us to continue. I'm going to return this amount and this amount. And if you need me, call, but clearly you're in a better position to handle this than I am. So go for it. Have a good time.
Okay. I think. Okay. All righty. Well, I'll work on, I guess maybe one, trying to flush those things out. So you're saying tell stories like that before people come find us.
Yeah, I would just look, you know, part of my job is to ask you this question. Can you enthusiastically endorse your professionals? And where you have a question or feel like you've outgrown them, my job is to then introduce you to somebody or some buddies that will be up to the level that you deserve. Okay?
Sounds good.
And you'd be surprised, you know, taking advice from non-professionals, friends, neighbors, CPAs, attorneys, on matters to do with your financial future is really fraught with danger.
For sure.
And it, well, you know, if you have a minute, tell the story.
Okay.
And the story is going to have a terrible ending.
So I tried to tell him that. I said, what you're doing is equivalent of financial suicide.
Yeah, it's going to have another, there's going to be another leg to this disaster. Okay. And he's made bad decisions all along. And this is just one more continuation of bad decisions. And if you wait enough time, this story will become a disaster. Death on the highway. Remember those death on the highway shows when you're doing your driver ed? They'd have death on the highway and scare the hell out of you. Well, that's what this is going to be. You know, it's just a question of
when
patience. 10 years, that will be death on the highway. And he can, you know, he's not going to go back to work, right?
Right.
And he's going to continue to spend. And he doesn't understand even inflation and buying power. It's crazy. But run from them. Ignorant people are really scary.
They're dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, they are. And they sue you because then they listen to an attorney and you're just one out of there.
Okay.
See you.
Yeah. Well, I've enjoyed our time together. We accomplished a lot. Enjoy your time.
Thanks. Your granddaughter. Okay. Preston, right. Thank you. Bye-bye.